Hi, welcome to an all-new episode of the DeviantArt Podcast. My name is Matt Buchholz. I'm your host, GG Matt B, and I'm coming to you live from DeviantArt HQ here in Los Angeles. Today, we've got with us a fantastic special guest known for her manga-inspired artwork and also her spectacular colors. Give a warm welcome to Ladauska.
Yay. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for inviting me to the podcast. It's an honor.
We're so glad to have you here. It's amazing. I've enjoyed getting to chat with you, getting to know you, and I think today's podcast is going to be our best, like, hands down.
I'll do my best.
Well, I know that you've seen some people that you recognize in chat. I've seen a few familiar names as well. That's really fun. But I want to get to know a little bit about you, introduce you to people who may not know you. So why don't you give us a little bit of a rundown of who you are, your history, all that fun stuff.
So I am an artist. I'm a freelance artist currently. I haven't been freelance for too long, maybe about 2 years. So I'm pretty new to this. And I draw manga-inspired art, and recently released a book that was funded through Kickstarter, Manga-Inspired Art and Tutorials by Asha Ladauska, Sketch with Asha. So I wonder if anybody from the chat has this book already. Let me know if you have one, guys.
Yeah, in the chat, say if you picked up that book, because that Kickstarter went amazing. That Kickstarter ran away. It was so popular.
I was so stressed before the Kickstarter, but I was really happy when the book got funded and I was able to create it. So it's also like a huge honor and help from the community and something to be really proud of.
Definitely. Yeah. So just so you know, when you're watching the chat, there's about a 30-second lag for people. Mm-hmm. So it takes a little bit of time to see the answers sometimes. But you started on DeviantArt like 11 years ago? Which is crazy.
Yeah, first post is from 12 years ago.
From 12 years ago. Oh my gosh. I can't even believe that there was 12 years ago for you to have been of age to be creating art.
Well, yeah, I'm not that young anymore.
Well, what was it like when you first started posting art? When you first decided like, hey, we're going to start putting art out there?
Well, I think it was quite scary because like, I was pretty young and I didn't really know how does internet work and what like what an immense power it has. But DeviantArt was the place where I won my first art competitions, where I made my first art friends, and like it was my introduction into the art community, and it felt amazing because I'm from Poland, from rather a small town in there. So that there's not that big community that you can grow together. Also, I really love manga style. And when I went to art school, the teachers told me, if you keep drawing like that, well, you're not going to get to any university. You won't even get to this school. You can't keep doing it. So I felt really oppressed with my art style. And like trying to get art, it didn't matter what I did. I changed my style and I started drawing realistically, and still teachers didn't approve of any of that. So it was like such a different world to put stuff online where you actually find people that like your art and you can hear nice things about it and also learn from others. Because as a community, we ask each other questions, we get answers, we help each other discuss the tools, and it's just, it's building and growing. You can't do that in school.
I think that's such an amazing thing too, is that the artistic community online, no matter what platform you're on, really does want to all grow together. Like I feel it's one of the few spaces that's not as competitive and more community driven. And just like,
I mean, people do get competitive too, but I think it's a good competition when everybody is motivating each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a positive drive behind it. I don't think I've ever seen anyone be like, I'm going to beat their art because they're horrible. Like everyone wants to like go up and do the best. And like I used to see that at conventions all the time. We would walk through and you would just have that positivity of artists going to different artist booths and just being so excited to get to see that art and to like celebrate that. But also, like you were saying, being able to like learn from each other is a really huge part of online art communities. How did you kind of take that like learning and apply that, especially when you made your book, which is like a bunch of tutorials.
Mm-hmm. Well, everything that I know, like I can say most of the things that I know right now, I learned from the internet and from other people. First on DeviantArt, I was asking people what kind of pencils they use or how do they blend so smoothly that you can't even see pencil lines. And I learned about graphite powder. I learned about different blending cloths, about using brushes for pencil art. And then when I transitioned to Instagram and into more manga style and just different art style, mm-hmm. I found out about Copic markers, and it was the same process. Like, oh, what are the Copic markers? What is this? And like just getting to know from people and discovering slowly different papers, different ways of blending Copic markers, and like even different markers apart from Copics. It was just like, it's an endless discovery. And even right now, I do learn a lot of new things through social media and online.
When you started with markers, like how many markers did you start with and how many markers are you up to now?
I think it's actually a nice story because I bought a set of 5 markers and 1 multiliner. And with those 5 markers, I made my first commissions. So it was just 5 colors, pastel colors. I made my first commissions. And from the money that I got from commissions, I bought more markers. And it continued for years. And in about 4 years, I collected almost all of the markers. So like 358 it is. It's uh-huh. quite a collection. You know, I'm here in Japan right now, and I traveled with all my markers. And it's not going to be a lie if I say it's half of my luggage.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So like I can't really travel with clothes. I can't. It's just, I can't have any possessions because just art tools and markers and papers take the whole suitcase.
I love kind of this alternate universe I've created in my head where the markers are kind of holding your closet hostage of like, you can only have space for us.
So, yeah, sadly. Well, I ain't got no closet. I just have a suitcase right now.
That's amazing though, and that like art is such a cool thing where you find those sort of things and they just expand. The more you learn with art, the more options you find and the more ways you find to express yourself, and it's so exciting when you get to tap into something like that
because, yes, like, but it's so stressful. did I mention that like the more options you have and then you just sit in front of the paper, it's like I have these endless possibilities. What do I do? And then like the mind goes blank and I just don't. Sometimes I sit in front of the paper for hours and just can't draw anything because there's too many possibilities.
So when you find yourself in that sort of blank page scenario, how do you get past that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I think it actually has to do with art block and all that, like mental issues, because when you can't draw something, you just start bullying yourself and being negative, like, oh, what happened to me? I don't know how to draw anymore. And it's like the negativity is just swallowing you. And when I realized that I'm in that spot, I tried to like breathe in and step out from myself. So it's like look from myself, from behind of myself, and think, okay, you're in this really dark space right now. This is not good. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to like realize the situation that I'm in and trying to tell myself that actually I'm the same person. Like my hands are the same. It's just this mind is bullying me and I need to stop this immediately because if I don't love myself, nobody else is going to love me like for all the hate that I give to myself. So I think self-love and just like positive words to yourself and just trying to encourage yourself and maybe sometimes step away from art for a minute. It's a good idea. It's just the positivity is not going to happen on its own. You kind of have to be positive to get out of the art block.
Definitely. Yeah. So one thing I want to touch on is you haven't always been a freelance artist. Like you said, you're fairly new to being completely freelance and completely reliant on art. So tell us a little bit about that transition of where you were before and how you decided to go freelance.
Mm-hmm. So it was really a story of two of me. So there was one me that kind of really wanted to do manga art and these kind of cute drawings. And there was this other me where I was told by other people that there is no money in that kind of art, that I need to become a designer to make a living from art. And so I struggled with that, but I kind of pursued it, forced myself to go to the university and finish it. Even though 3-year course took me 6 years because I failed once, I dropped out twice. And while at the university, I got a placement job as a graphic designer. And then I stayed in that job afterwards. So I've been there for 3.5 years. But I'd never stopped drawing. Because the job was rather hard, and it's a very fast-paced environment being a designer, and there's a lot of work to do, I didn't have that much time for drawing, and I couldn't draw at work. It wasn't an art-related job, even though it is kind of art-related.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing the job and then drawing after hours, and then suddenly it just turned into 2 full-time jobs because my Instagram grew at the time. I was getting commissions. I started my Patreon, and like I was working on a book, but I was still working in there. And at some point, I wasn't getting any sleep at all. It was just 1 hour nap, and I had to go back to work there, coming back, doing the drawing, and I couldn't keep up with it anymore. I kind of burnt out at work too, so. I had to make the decision whether which job to have. I couldn't have both of them. And then I really value my employers for that, because I went up to them and said what my situation is and that I need a break from my job. I wasn't ready to just quit yet because that was a bit of a big decision for me.
Yeah, very big decision.
Yeah. I wasn't ready for that. I was scared, like, the money's going to stop. I'm going to die of hunger, going to go in debt. And what am I going to do? So I literally just asked them for a leave for 6 months, and they granted it for me. So I was able to go do my own thing, try it out. And if it doesn't work, I could go back to work and just start over there. So it was kind of hard and stressful, but in those 6 months, like after 6 months, I just went there back once to hand in the letter of resignation. So I think it was done pretty good for me. And, you know, they told me they knew I'm not going to come back, but they were still very helpful and supportive this way.
That's amazing that they were so supportive. Like, I think it's very like special that they were able to do that for you. So something you touched on there is like the stress level that goes into making that decision. And something that really stuck with me in our previous talk was how many times you forced yourself into uncomfortable situations and outside your comfort zone, and how that's really shaped your career in a way. And so what sort of things, just from like a very top level perspective, would you say, like, what are the benefits of pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone?
Well, I think I wouldn't achieve anything without pushing myself outside of the comfort zones. Without the courage to post online, I wouldn't even grow any social media. Without the courage to like try to go to conventions, I wouldn't even know what it's like. I wouldn't meet any other artists. I wouldn't travel the world like I did last year. It's just without pushing myself and with even in art, even in drawing, drawing things that I'm not really comfortable with drawing or I don't know how to draw yet, if I didn't push myself, I wouldn't be where I am right now.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like you have to do certain things to become comfortable with them and to make them part of your comfort zone later. Like you said, even starting at that very base level of it might be scary or stressful or worrisome to post your art online because a lot of people could see it. But once you do it enough times, you kind of realize like, okay, here's the worst that could happen. Here's the best that could happen. And I'm okay with those ends. And you start getting more and more comfortable to where that's just an easier thing to do. And then you get to make that next step of like, okay, now I'm going to try selling my art, or now I'm going to try doing something bigger. And you get to take those little steps each time to really grow yourself and become comfortable with each thing.
Mm-hmm. Without stepping out of comfort zones, I definitely wouldn't even be able to draw what I can right now. Because I always try to push myself into some sort of tasks. Like I have 30 days for the next 30 days, all my drawings are going to include a hand, which I also did in the past. And this way I improved a lot on drawing hands. Well, mm-hmm. if I didn't do that, all my posts on my social media would just be faces and nothing else. Because how would I draw hands, legs, or full bodies?
I mean, hands are terrifying. I'm sure that the chat will agree that like hands are some of the most stressful things to draw. I think every drawing of mine on DeviantArt is someone being like this, or like hands in pockets. Like they're
you need the challenge.
Very clever ways to hide hands. Lots of reaching out of frame.
Oh. Holding that's a mug, a good one, actually.
Where you just see like the very tip of the fingers. Like hands are terrifying. So like that's amazing that you pushed yourself to do that. And I mean, even in a grander scale, like you pushed yourself out of your comfort zone by traveling the world, like even art related. So let's share like where you are now with everyone and kind of how you got there, like geographically.
Cool, that's interesting. I'm in Japan right now, guys. It's 3 a.m. for me. I hope you appreciate my presence. I don't put makeup on every day at 3 a.m.
You're a champion.
So, yeah. And how did I get here? I after traveling to the United States last year, to Poland, to the UK, to Germany, I was really excited for more travel, but needed a holiday. So I put some money aside, invested into this holiday trip to Japan, and came here in February. And then, you know, it happened in 2020, like everything collapsed, everything got canceled, all my flights got canceled, all my conventions this year got canceled. And I couldn't return back to my country, and I still can't return. So that's how I stayed here, which I also have to say takes a lot of courage, because I don't speak Japanese. All I can say is like, please this, please that, or like how much, and then I still don't understand the answer. So
that's amazing. Yeah. That's so brave to be in a country where you don't know the language super well. Like that's incredible that you're able to do that.
Actually, it's super fun every day, because every day I'm just finding new products that I still don't know what they do, or finding new places and like some cultural clashes. So it's super fun here.
So I actually saw a question from the chat related to this, where Eslim Sama asked, what are the best and worst things you've come across while in Japan?
Well, I actually don't know what are the worst things, because I feel like I love everything about Japan. But the best things is, I think, the politeness of Japanese people and the respect, and like how precisely they do everything, how precisely their product. Well, I mean, that's probably the worst. Okay, I got one worst thing about Japan. Their packages are like packet within a packet within a packet within a packet. If you buy a packet of cookies, there's probably like 4 smaller packets of cookies in there, and each cookie is still wrapped individually. So that's I hate plastic, so that's a very bad thing about Japan. But they're improving right now. They put fees on plastic bags, so not many people take free bags anymore. And then the best things is just like, surprisingly, it's easy here. It's not that difficult because of how precise they do everything. Everything works. They're super polite. Everybody tries to respond to my questions, or like uses their phone with translator app, so we kind of communicate this way.
That's really awesome. I love that even in chat right now, I'm seeing people say like from all over the world where they're watching from. I saw people from Ecuador, Paris, a bunch of places tuning in. Like that's incredible. And again, if people watching want to ask questions, we do have producers in chat who are watching right now, taking your questions down and leaving them. We're going to do a big Q&A at the end of this, so you'll be able to ask all of your questions and get them answered, which is really great. And again, there's a caption contest on a piece of art, and you can find a link in our bio, and that will enter you for your chance to win a Wacom One tablet. So you can get something to level up your art for just being kind of witty.
Good luck, everybody. I'll put the link is already in my description too, so I hope it's easy to find. I'll put it in the caption of my latest post too.
Ah, nice. That's very easy then. So Let's see. I think something else I'd like to touch on, still going back to kind of that, like, pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. What are different ways that you feel that the community as a whole can push themselves, like the artistic community?
I think doing things together is amazing. Like, I watch a lot of artists on Twitch and usually just try to draw along with them. And when I'm doing my voiceover lessons for patrons, I usually structure the voiceover so that they can draw along with me. It's like, oh, you can do it this way. Try to repeat what I'm doing or try to do the same exercises. So I try to push other people out of their comfort zones too, not just myself. But I think, like, just drawing along and taking part in all the different events on social media, even like Inktober, which is coming, or which has been translated into so many other things like Witchtober, Sketchtober, or whatever somebody can come up with. So it's like a big event, and I think it would be amazing to push yourself out of comfort zones this month, like the next month in October. What else? It's just, you know, just starting. The first step is you. You got to make the decision to do it.
That's a real big one. And I think a lot of people, myself included, like, I'm old, like, I'm ancient now. And I have a hard time going into new, yes, this is all Hollywood makeup and making me look very young. I'm 78 and I kid. But trying to take on new things and learn new things and be bad at them is a real big challenge and very much outside of your comfort zone. And so just starting is such a big step, and realizing that, like, you can only improve if you start, otherwise you're not going to improve at all.
Yeah, you can watch for months, you can watch any tutorials anybody ever made on the planet, but if your hands don't try to repeat the tutorials, then it's a it's not everything.
Exactly. So a big thing that is, we've kind of touched on a little bit, is that community space that is the artistic community. And something that I think a lot of people latch onto, and this ties into pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and so many other things, is imposter syndrome. And I think that everyone thinks that they have it, and they don't realize that everyone pretty much has it. And so I would love for you to talk a little bit about that and how, like, you've dealt with that and, like, focused on that and used that to improve your own art.
Oh yeah. Well, this is a bit of a difficult one because I don't have a solution for everybody for that. But yes, it does include me too. Every time I post on Instagram, I'm like, what if like nobody likes it? What if nobody comes to this live video? Is what I thought yesterday and today. So it's like, it never leaves me. It's always just like sitting on the shoulder and whispering all the bad things to my ear. But it's like, the other side of me is trying to say, then what? If nobody likes it, then what? Did you enjoy the process of drawing? Yes, I loved it because I really love drawing. And then, like, this is genuinely coming from within me. So I'm doing what I love, and this is what matters the most.
Yeah, I think that even just getting it more spoken of is, like, such a huge thing because, like a lot of mental health things, it's often stigmatized where it's seen as, like, a very negative thing. And once more people talk about it kind of affecting everyone, it becomes something that we can all kind of identify and deal with.
And yeah, the first thing is realizing what it is and that it's actually a thing that you can name and tackle and battle with it. It's not just negative thoughts. It has a name and it has some sort of solutions to how to battle it.
Exactly. And so when you are posting online and we've got that, like, social community, what sort of, like, friendships have you made just via the internet in the art community?
Oh, I made a lot, and, like, I'm surprised because I made friends with people that before I was starting to post online, I was just admiring and like, oh, they're so amazing. And right now we just chat normally as if we've been friends forever. That's even including Siren, which I have been watching YouTube videos, and I even, like, followed her everywhere before she had Instagram, or before I had Instagram. And then we met on my first Comic Con, as we were both invited as guests, and it was just like, you know, my mind was blown there. And, you know, it all started on Instagram. And then I met other amazing artists that I just knew from social media platforms. And it's just, I can't believe how easy it is to talk to everybody and like how friendly everybody is.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you can really find a great community and some close friendships where I've had people where I've talked to, you know, as DeviantArt or as myself across years of time. And then I finally bump into them at, you know, a convention, like you said, like I'm at, you know, Anime Expo or CTN or Lightbox. It's like, I know you, but we've never met. This is... And true. You know, now with the pandemic, it's completely different because everyone is online and everything is online. Like, I don't know if you were able to do Lightbox Expo this past weekend, but like, it was real interesting. They had a full artist alley that you could virtually navigate through and see booths. And it was kind of cool.
I'm pretty scared of the online conventions. I don't really know. I didn't decide to take part in any. I'm just like either physical or not at all.
Well, it's still very new. Yeah. You never know how they're gonna work. You never know how they go. It's really interesting. I'm excited to see where they go. You know? Mm-hmm. Like what would be your ideal like online version of a convention then?
I don't know.
Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, but you know when you're online, it feels like you're constantly talking to yourself because like you don't see the person on the other side. Well, I can see you, but I can't see anybody from the chat, right. And then I can only see the number of people out there. So like there is this wall that is just like I can't see through the connection, and like. I don't know how would we surpass that for my perfect meetup with people maybe.
Yeah. So once we bridge that gap of the connection, then we've got online conventions down.
Yeah, maybe.
I think the thing I miss most about conventions in physical space is that time when you are in Artist Alley before the convention opens, and it's mm-hmm. literally just artists and like vendors walking around. Yeah. That was always the most magical time for me at a convention because you get to like, you can hear just people talking about the art and being excited about what's about to happen.
Mm-hmm. I made so many friends with people that just had a booth next to me that like I would never probably ever even find out about their art if not the fact that they were just next to me and we had to spend so many days together. But it was always nice. And like I keep in touch with those people. So it's super cool.
Awesome. Well, let's get into the Q&A. We had a lot of questions come in, like a lot. The majority of my morning was taking questions from Instagram and pasting them into a document because so many people love you and your art. So let's start working our way through these. And also, if you're watching right now, you can put your questions in the chat. We do have producers adding to that list so that we'll be able to answer as many questions as we can. And we're just going to go through these. And kind of go through some awesome questions that you guys left. Thank you so much for leaving them. So this one I think is really important, especially in the time of social media. How do you manage a balance of what others want to see you draw versus what you want to draw? And that's from Ashaki.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the question. And I think it is a really good one. And before, I struggled with it a lot. So I was always trying to post something popular, a fan art of a popular character. I just felt that pressure that I need to post what people want to see, what people want. I kept asking in the comments, like, what is the next character you want to see? And then I would, whether I felt it or not, whether I liked the character or not, I would draw it. But recently, if you go through my feed, maybe like 5% is fan art and then 95% is just my original creations. And that actually makes me super happy. I'm more happy creating my own things rather than doing fan arts. But every now and then when I come across something that I'm really passionate about, like there is a new anime coming out or like a big update on a comic book or just something happening without the community, I would do the fan art because like I feel like it. It's, and I know that many people are going to relate who are fans of that particular character. So I think I have found my balance, but at the beginning I did struggle with it a lot.
So you mentioned anime. I have to ask, what anime are you enjoying right now?
Right now, I'm enjoying Rental Girlfriend. It's so popular here in Japan that if you like walk into the store, every store has some sort of merchandise from that anime. So.
I'm still on backlogs. I'm catching up on My Hero Academia right now. I'm so far behind.
That's a good one too.
Oh, I love it. Okay. From Official Alita, they say they want to start doing art for a living, but they're scared they might fail. How can they be successful, or what steps can they take to try and be more successful in that move?
Well, I can't promise success to anybody because I feel like there is some sort of lack factor, some sort of fake it till you make it factor, and some sort of just like working hard and pushing through all the hardships. So I shared my story that I actually was doing two jobs until I was kind of confident that I can make my living of art on its own. So I did have a day job and I was selling art or commissions outside of the job. But I think if like people are really doing their best to improve and working hard and putting online portfolios professionally, so just like regularly updating with new works and like presentation is on point, always professional. There is clear communication how to reach out about commissions. I think like this is a way of marketing yourself online. So like good luck. I think it's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Finding those steps of marketing, I think, is a big challenge for a lot of people. And coming from like a marketing and design background, like what sort of strategies did you find personally that worked well for you to like help push yourself out there versus just like, I'm going to post whatever art I draw? What sort of strategies might someone be able to use?
Well, what I found is as working in marketing, because as we chatted before, I worked in marketing for 3.5 years. So I kind of learned how important is communication and sending regular updates. In the company, I would every day work on some sort of email communication that we would send to our list of clients so that they always remember about the brand. They always hear something. They always see an email. There's always an update on the website. Like, there's always something. There's no radio silence for a month because everybody would probably forget. But like, there's always some sort of information coming. So being active and always presenting everything professionally and clean. So I wouldn't just like take a picture of my art from far away with all the kitchenware on the table with some dirty dishes and stuff. And I wouldn't put that online. I tried to make I try to present my art professionally. So like with a good lighting, if it needs editing, I would just edit the photo. And if I want to put a message in there, so like, oh, shop opening, I wouldn't put the whole information page of text on top of my drawing. I would just say like shop opening and small date and more info in the comment, just like not to overload the post with too much information. And like, this is what I learned from my previous job in marketing.
Yeah, I think that you do such an amazing job, especially looking at the way that you present your traditional work and like your marker work. You have like a little hint of like the markers off to the side and some of the colors you use. Like, it's such a beautiful presentation, but it also tells people at a quick glance, like, this isn't done necessarily in Photoshop. This is something done with markers. And it helps give so much information in a single image without it being too much. Like you said, you're not packing it with everything. You found a good balance to make it work. Let's see. This one is a good one. Also regarding like Instagram and presentation, from Illustration by Jean Yu, they ask, do you think it's important to curate a specific color palette for your Instagram feed?
I don't think that's necessary because on Instagram, people don't always go to your profile. So like probably a lot of people don't actually know that I have a curated feed with one row of pencil drawings, one row of traditional drawings and like color, and then one of digital art. Probably not many people actually know that. Now the chat is going to know.
Yeah. Wait until after the podcast to look.
Yeah. But it can be beneficial because like people could always recognize you for the color palette that you're using, but it can also be limiting because like, what if someone doesn't like the colors that you're using? They'll be like, oh, pink again. That's me, by the way. I just use pink and blue all the time.
They're good colors.
Yeah, I do try to get outside of my comfort zone and create something in green from time to time. I think green is my most avoided color, but I try my best. So personally, I don't try to limit myself, but if someone wants to, it can be used as a benefit too.
So this is a good question, just kind of on life. Any tips on pushing yourself to improve without overdoing it and ending up hurting yourself from momentary pixels? So how do you find that drive and push yourself without reaching burnout?
I might not be able to advise on this one because I literally, when I start something, I'm in the zone and I can be drawing for 14 hours. And if like if it doesn't work, I just rip it all off and say, what a bad day. And then, you know, I don't draw for a few days after that because I just don't want to touch anything. So, I guess everything comes down to timing yourself and just controlling yourself, which I'm sorry, I can't advise on because I'm still working on this one.
I think there's a thing too, where perhaps like as you reach more and more experience and you understand like some things aren't going to work and you do have those pieces that you're just going to tear up and get rid of, you develop a resistance to burnout from those things. And so you can realize like, hey, look, I need to let go of this stress right now. And that like take a little break, take a breather, and that's not going to impact me. And you can take those breathers and those breaks without it stressing you out that you're not working during that time.
True.
Because that's
the best.
I mean, that's a really big thing is a lot of people, when they take those breaks, they aren't actually taking a break because they're so worried about.
And stressed about the past and not letting go of it. It's just still kind of clinging to it. I know. I'm one of those.
Oh, no.
Thank you for the advice. I'll implement it in my heart.
So Little Man 95 wants to know, have you ever thought of making a manga?
So I did start a few mangas. I started when I was at the university because I always tried to push my manga projects. And then every time I came with a proposal and with drawings for like, I want to do manga for this level, for this unit at the university. And they're like, why is it read backwards? You're in the UK. You are supposed to read books from like, you know, this page, not from the back page. No, next. So like, they would never accept my project. I would still do them anyway, but they would just downgrade me for it. So I have a few projects that I started, but never finished. Also, there's like a lot I want to tell, but I'm super slow at drawing. I'm still trying to improve and get back on speed. So if I started drawing manga, you'll probably not hear from me for the next 5 years, and then after 5 years, I have 30 pages done, maybe. I think the time for manga is going to come. I really want to do one. Really want to do one. Just not ready yet.
So from Arima Fine, sorry if I mispronounce any names. I'm horrible at reading. They want to know, how has the long stay in Japan inspired your art?
I actually love it super, like, I love it so much here. And it's super inspiring every time I, like, feel really burnt out or just not feeling well about my art. I go to an art store and pick up any art book, and it's just instantly, it's just the colors, the art. Because there's so much of colorful and manga art in here. Even, like, in a computer catalog that I just posted in my stories today, all the computers were like presented with manga characters. So it was super cute. So like, I did not experience this in any other country because it's not as popular, but here the inspiration is everywhere. And like, I learned how to take it in. And like, whenever I'm stuck or not inspired, I just look into any art books in the stores or any manga books, which are in any like convenience store in the corner. And I also got some books for myself too. So less clothes in my suitcase. Now I have a few more books to carry.
And then, but by the end of this, by the time you go back to Poland, it's just going to be markers and books.
I'm not coming back. I'm like, I'm staying here.
You're going to have one pair of sweatpants and a hoodie.
Yeah, that's about what I have right now.
That's amazing. I'm so envious that you have like such an amazing place where you can literally find your inspiration everywhere. Like, that sounds like a dream as an artist.
It is. It was always my dream to be here and to come here. And as much as this was, me being here is an accident, then it's like kind of a dream come true.
Ghost Postmail kind of tips into that with what made you fall in love with the manga style originally?
The first manga that I found out about was Chobits by Clamp. And you can't explain love. When you see something, you just like, it grabs your heart, it grabs your soul. You're in love already and you can't do anything about it. So I was lost the moment I found about Chobits.
Rachel Birnbaum wants to know, who are some artists that you admire and that inspire you?
There is a lot of Japanese artists that I admire and that inspire me. The names might be difficult or I might mispronounce them, but there is Eisaku Kubonouchi, there is Morikura, and there is anime. So there's a lot of like manga and anime artists over here. And I also always mention how much Ilya Kuvshinov, he's not Japanese, but he's in Japan, how he inspired my art. Because like I started my Instagram because of him and because of him posting every day, I really wanted to do the same thing. So like he's also part of this culture right now. So mentioning Japan and any art inspiration, I'll always mention his name.
So this is kind of a specific one that I think is really great. What do you do to stay motivated during the pandemic and during these times? How do you limit distractions from Charlene?
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, like the pandemic doesn't change much because as a freelance artist, you just stay shut in at home and like nothing changed much for me. I'm just stuck in a different home because I keep moving from one Airbnb to another one. But actually not much changed. So as long as you remember to do things instead of just looking at things and watching things, then I think you'll be good.
Do you have to, when you work, do you put yourself in a very like tunnel vision sort of space, or do you have a lot of stuff going on around you?
No, I never work. I feel like I want to do things and then I do things. It's never that I force myself to do something. I wouldn't take a job that I don't want to do. So usually when a job comes over, I'm just so excited to do it. I just start away. And yes, I do have a lot of distractions. I watch people on Twitch constantly. I like listen to music sometimes. I have a lot of books and other stuff around me to just look at. So I have plenty of distractions, but I just love drawing so much. So I think like this is taking me in more than all the other distractions.
So Vinefox wants to know tips to improve on their line art. Like what's one tip that you would give people if they're struggling with like creating great line art? Or what's one common mistake you see people make with line art?
Well, it depends which tool they are using or which tool they mean. But usually I would say every day practice. So even my line art over years has changed. Even the way I use ink pens or the way I do line art with pencils have changed because like my abilities have changed. Sometimes I'd be like super scared to put a line on paper and the line will come out shaky. But the more of these lines I do, the less shaky they become. So it all comes down to drawing every day or like at least regularly.
So you just said something that I think is super interesting and that I don't hear talked about often, but styles and what you can do change very frequently as an artist. Mm-hmm. And when do you know, or how do you free yourself from feeling like you have to draw in a specific style that you've established?
Oh, that's another one I might not know how to answer because I've never looked for a style. The only objective that I have with my art is to improve on it. And I keep trying new things. I keep trying to draw hair differently or draw eyes differently. Like I draw a lot of faces, but I don't always approach them drawing the same way. I always try to tweak them by like 1 millimeter, slant eyes the other way. So they might look a lot similar because it's still me drawing them and I still have a lot of limitations when I draw them. But I know inside that I'm trying to change something. It's not that I'm limited with my art style. I know the box, like my art style is this and I just stick within it. It's definitely not that. I just draw how I feel and I try to improve all the time.
See, and I think that's an amazing perspective to have about art, because I think so many people feel like this drive, or one of the top questions we always get is, how do I find my style? How do I figure out what my style is? How do I develop my style? And when people feel like they've found that, I feel like they lock themselves into what that is and what that means. And that almost stops you from growing and trying these new things. And it ties all back into what we talked about earlier, of pushing yourself out of your comfort zone in order to improve, you know? And
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I actually do. Like, whenever anybody asks me about style, like, I can't see my own style. I can hear people talking about it, but I can't see it myself. It's just that, oh, really? Is that how I draw for real? So it's not something I see. It's very difficult for me to answer.
That's such a fun thing, though, that you see it as just celebrating and enjoying your art. I think that that's so pure and like so great. Like, that's really refreshing.
Thank you.
So an interesting thing that I wanted to talk on earlier that I missed was when Matt W., our artist relations guy, was talking with you, he worked a lot with your manager. So when people are building up their art and they're starting to have more needs and more of the business side, how do you figure out when you might need outside help to continue your growth as an artist?
Mm-hmm. Well, I knew I needed help. It's just I never reached out for it. I know I needed help when I had around 6 months of unresponded messages and like so many missed opportunities, so many invitations, and like so many commission requests. I'm like, just like, I don't even know which one's the most important to respond to. And I would just miss out on all that. So I kind of met my manager by accident when I ended up in the US on a Comic Con. We met there, we signed our napkin contract over there, and we've been working from that day together, and it's just helping me massively. He's doing a brilliant job, always responding to messages on time and just keeping the conversations and keeping everything that I can't keep organized, he's keeping organized. So it's a great help.
It's always good to know when you might need help to like actually be able to reach out for it. So I think that that's really important for people to be able to identify. Mm-hmm. So let's see. I think that this one's really interesting as well. What's your process to make a character feel alive? And that's from Bella Chianti Cafe.
I think that if you try to put feelings in your characters, that's what makes them alive. Or if you try to put them into situations that are maybe part of your everyday life or your everyday struggles, something that other people can relate to, that is what brings character to life. But it's like more of a feeling kind of way. I'm not sure how to do it with actual art style or like with, you know, with the drawing, because as I said, I don't see my own art style. So it's just, I try to draw how I feel. And that's how I would approach this subject.
Yeah, no drawing T poses. You got to give them that emotion.
Well, if this is the task, if you got to design a character, you might have to do a T pose. Or if they're posing in a T, then you have to do it.
So a couple of people have asked, what advice would be your biggest advice to give to young aspiring artists? And we've received that from several people, so I'm not going to name all of them.
Well, I think this would change. If you asked me yesterday, I would probably say a different thing. But today I would say, like, don't be afraid of failure and just enjoy the process. So a lot of things come from joy and embracing the failures. It's not that I succeeded with everything I did in my life, that I didn't do anything wrong. God damn, I did so much wrong and I still don't know what I'm doing. But it's just like not being afraid. It's I think it's a good advice.
Awesome. And then this is going to be our last question before we sign off, because we're getting close on time and Instagram's really brutal if we go over. A couple of people have asked this as well. How do you choose the shade, hues, color for your pieces? Because your art, I think, is so colorful and like so vibrant. Like, that's one of the first things that grabs people.
Thank you. Well, as you said, I like choosing vibrant colors. So that's probably one of them. I would rarely choose from gray colors and work with those, because I would probably find it difficult. So I choose contrasting colors. I choose a lot of vibrant colors. And then the shading just goes, if I put a character in an environment, I'll try to match the environment with the shading. Or if there's like no background or anything, I usually just use this purplish gray color on multiply or like grayish marker, purple gray marker, and just put over in the shadow, and that's my shadow.
Well, that works. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Again, for people watching, thank you for watching. And don't forget that you can enter the caption contest to get a Wacom One tablet. The link is in the bio, so please check that out. And where can people find you online?
Okay, thank you very much again for inviting me to the podcast. Yeah, it was a great honor. And online, I know my name might be a bit difficult and like a lot of people misspell or mispronounce it, but if you put Ladowska, which is Ladowska, in Google or on Instagram, you should be able to find me. Also, well, you can find me by my book, which is Sketch with Ash. I think, yeah. A catchy phrase.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us. Thank you so much for staying up until 3, almost 4 a.m. for us and being here. I think everyone had a great time. And again, my name is Matt Buchholz, Gigi Matty. And thank you for watching the DeviantArt podcast. Make sure to subscribe, like all the things so that we can continue making more of these and continue bringing you amazing artists like Ladowska to come talk with you. And have a great day. Goodbye.